this is the Linux Show for April the 20th, 2004, and we are back after a long hiatus. We were gone last Tuesday. We were supposed to be broadcasting later last week, but due to technical difficulties in the hotel, we just could not do our broadcasting live from ISPCon. I'll go into that a little bit later. You'd think you show up to a conference for internet professionals. No, for ISP professionals. You'd think the hotel would be prepared to have really good connectivity.
You'd be wrong.
Yeah, you would be wrong. Sure. It was a disaster.
All hotels suck. They all have a T1 line, and they don't know they have no more than that.
Yeah.
That's what usually happens.
This hotel actually had two T1s, one for the expo part of the building and one for the residential part of the building. But regardless, even though they had two, it was still a disaster. And it was quite an embarrassment for a whole bunch of ISP vendors who are going to show off their really cool ASP products and couldn't get online to demonstrate the products. Quite a letdown for a lot of vendors in some ways, but really was a great conference.
There was an opportunity for somebody in the area with a lot of bandwidth to put up a bunch of wireless hubs and cantennas.
Well, actually, one of the
blanket the field with Wi-Fi.
Yeah, well, one of the local ISPs actually did that, and out in the hallway outside of the room, where they held the actual event, they could get good connectivity. But inside the actual room where we were being hosted, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. But we'll go into that another time. This is the Linux Show. The whole crew is here. Plus, Eric Raymond just called in a minute ago, so we've got Eric tonight. So let's go around the panel and just say hi to everybody. How are you doing tonight, Doc?
I'm doing great. Great. A lot of work to do, and I'm cranking on it. DNS went down for a while today, but, you know, stuff happens.
You sound like you're on a landline at home.
I'm on a landline at home. It's the last one for a while. I'll actually be in Europe.
You're not in a car heading somewhere, and you're going to disappear in 3 seconds?
I always liked the restaurant one with the tinking glasses. That's my favorite. Especially the tinking glasses.
Yeah, the cocktail version.
Yes, yeah, well, of course.
Yeah, no, it's we're home right now, but tonight's the last night. Tomorrow I go down to the Desktop Linux Summit where I'm going to speak on Thursday. I may attempt to emulate Eric and just improvise the whole damn thing. I don't know. That'll be scary. But
I think you should.
Maybe I should for a change. I don't know. I've not done that. Generally, I'm too ADD. I tend to want my crutches, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Whereas with me, write a speech. What is this alien concept you speak
yes,
of?
Yes, I know. But you're good with that jazz. Actually, if I just stand there and do stand up, I've been pretty good at that.
Well, there you go.
So you know, I could just go up there and say, are there any questions? And
that's a good way to do it, hey, Doc. I'm so far gone now. I haven't written a lesson plan for one of the classes I teach in 3 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I improvise all my classes now.
You got some catching up to do.
Probably.
We'll see. I'll bring my Lindos laptop and ask him to fix it again. It's like a Fiat. You know what Fiat stands for, right? Does anybody know what Fiat stands for?
Fiat, yes.
Yeah, fix it again, Tony. That's that's terrible. Anyway.
Okay.
It's like Ford, found on Runway Dead.
Right.
Or Saab, seen alongside Autobahn Broken.
So how are you tonight, Arnie?
Oh, doing fine. Busy, busy, busy.
Okay. What about on the other end of the country, Russ? Have you gotten over your illness of the last week?
Yeah, I got past that. Of course, we had more joy because
Easter weekend, we had three cars fail within 16 hours.
Oh, great.
My daughter's tire blew out. Then one of our lovely neighbors around 2 o'clock in the morning backed into not one but two of my automobiles parked on the street and totaled both of them, according to the insurance company. So I've been busily trying to find other means of transportation because I'm about to hit the road again. And that gets a little bit rough, you know, when you have to, like, get to the airport and you don't want to have the wife sitting home with her finger in her ear for 3 weeks at a time. So it's been busy.
Okay.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet, been busy. Yeah, I knew it had to be pretty intense when you couldn't hook up with us last week at all when we were at Washington, D.C. It was quite an experience. I'll tell you about that after we say hi to the rest of the panel. But, Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, okay. I haven't gotten hit by any tornadoes yet.
Yeah, well, we've had enough of them in Chicago tonight, that's for sure. The entire Chicago Metro got whacked twice today by series of microcells. About an hour ago, three tornadoes touched down, all within about a 35-mile radius of where I'm sitting. Kevin's, you know, the next county or so over and is going through the exact same thing. That's springtime in Illinois. We love our tornadoes. So how are you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm working on a program.
Well, good for you.
Coding as usual. Having just got back from, let's see, PenguinCon 2, and before that, Oxford, England.
Hmm. You were just in England, huh?
Yes. Had you heard about PenguinCon 2?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Combination science fiction convention and Linux conference. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, actually, I think when I first heard about PenguinCon, I thought the entire idea was just brilliant. And I'm hoping that they can bring one here to the Chicago area because I think it would be a wonderful way to reach critical mass in an open source.
Credit goes to Rob Landley, who thought up the idea and then worked like a dog for 18 months to pull off PenguinCon 1, including recruiting a con committee. I did sort of have something to do with it because it was designed around a document I wrote a number of years ago about how people who run computer conferences could learn things from science fiction fandom, because any science fiction fan knows things about how to run a fun event that a lot of the people on the trade show circuit haven't learned yet.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. There's a lot of craziness going on at the sci-fi events.
Wonderful craziness. Don't call it sci-fi, please. That is a term we reserve for greasy Japanese monster movies and the like.
Yeah, but I like Godzilla movies. Okay. You have a problem with me liking Godzilla movies?
No.
Okay.
No. It's just we tend to avoid the term sci-fi.
Okay, what's the alternative? I'll bite.
SF, or science fiction.
San Francisco.
Yeah. But I like that. Well, let me tell you a real brief description of, I'm not going to call it a week in hell, because it really wasn't that bad. It was interesting. I was in Washington, D.C. last week to do a little bit of lobbying, go to some meetings, recruit for a couple of new shows that are going to be coming down the pipe on the Geekcast network. You'll hear more about those. Actually, I have to thank you for helping some of that happen.
Sure.
You just don't know that you did it. I booked a room in the hotel called the Embassy Inn. Not the Embassy Suite, but the Embassy Inn. Very nice little hotel. Not knowing that this is like in the heart of the Washington, D.C. gay community. being a guy alone in a hotel room in the heart of the upper-class gay community was an interesting experience, to say the least.
But one that I take it you are not anxious to repeat.
Well, thankfully, I'm ugly, you know? So, you know, it solved the problem. Interesting week, though. Interesting week. Some actual good works were done in terms of technology, organization on the political side. The ISP business has had the same basic problem that the rest of the technology industry has had for the last several years, and that there's lots of various types of trade associations out there, and they all have their little fiefdoms, and they all have their little special little niches that they focus in to, and so because of those specialties, the industry as a whole has a lot of difficulty getting together in times when you need to have large-scale critical mass to lobby against important issues, and so the ISP business has been getting the crap kicked out of them by the telcos, the cable companies, and in particular, Michael Paul. We had a guest on the show, of course, a couple weeks ago talking about this very subject. And last week, a lot was done in terms of getting all of the various ISP trade associations to basically take their heads out of their asses and actually start working together. So it was a momentous week in the history of that industry group. And a lot of what was going on in terms of teaching advocacy sessions at the conference was basically, you know, learned from what was going on over in the open source industry group. And so, you know, a lot can be attributed to what has been going on within the Linux community for many, many years to opening the eyes of the people in the ISP world. So it was a good week. But let's go ahead and jump into segment number one and talk about the news. Well, Doc, what have you got for us this week?
Oh, my gosh. I've got my head down all day long, so I think that I have the same news everybody else has, which is what happens next with Cisco. What does this actually mean? And I'm really not the one to talk about it. I'm just the one to sort of point at it. So it was Russ's link, and it's Eric's expertise, so I just couldn't defer to one of those guys and let them.
Well, actually, why don't we put that off to segment number two?
Okay.
Because that's really what I've bumped our guest to next week, just so we could talk about the really momentous news about Cisco, so we'll leave it for that.
You know, I think I missed something. What happened?
Well, no. You're going to have to wait until segment number two.
Ah, shut up.
Let's hurry up and get to it, because they turned into a pumpkin. So.
Okay, we will. So, Russ, what have you got for us this week?
Okay, I got a few stories here. Some of them were designated for last week's show, which didn't happen, but we'll cover them over again. First one, and of course all these links are on the Linux Show homepage, so you can find them all there. One from the Toronto Star, Levin Lighten Linux Debate. And this is an interesting little piece about how, actually I haven't seen one of these in a little while, but how a writer happens to say something that the Linux community took some exception to, and how he ended up kind of got beaten around the head and is trying to make some sense of it all and is asking people to lighten up. I think it's one of those things that you know, we've seen over and over again, and inside some sense, the day that this doesn't occur is going to be a sad day indeed, because then the passion's gone from the community. But on the other side of the fence is the notion that, you know, when we read something that is clueless or perhaps ill-informed, it's sometimes best to express ourselves in a more rational format rather than calling people names and questioning their parentage and making suggestions about their IQ, you know. So I think we're at the stage where at least we can learn to be a little bit disciplined in the way we discuss matters with other people, as difficult as that may be, because God knows in the last few months I've run into people with some really strange ideas about open source here and there, and you have to kind of bite your tongue and try to keep things in a very civil and diplomatic tone, but sometimes it's a little difficult.
What if they do have questionable parentage, though?
Ed, hominem attacks are never appropriate.
Well, yeah. Unless you really have to. But, no, it's one of those things that, you know, I think it's just a good reminder. Heck, I can remember Robin Miller talking about how he got soundly beaten about the head and shoulders for some of his early works having to do with Linux and open source, and he survived, so we can all be thankful for that. But it's one of those things that we do have to kind of check ourselves. I think it's it makes sense. Next one that I had on the list was a little piece over at, what is this, what's this? Actually, smh.com.au, so it's in Australia somewhere. And it's a little piece called Open Source or Open Sesame. And it's dealing with Cisco and the announcement that Cisco made, I think it was a week or two ago, that, oops, we have a backdoor on our wireless LAN devices, and there's no way to close it. Sorry, guys. And the author here goes on to say that, you know, open source is an excellent defense against exactly this sort of thing, where you're publishing the code so someone can raise their hand and say, this is stupid, let's fix this. And this is one of the problems with security through obscurity, is that sometimes you're not really secure at all. And this is one of those lessons the hard way.
What was their excuse as to why they could not close it?
Damned if I know.
That's an interesting claim.
They have not issued a statement as to why it cannot be closed as of yet.
Yeah, I mean, I just, a backdoor. Oh, we've got a backdoor in our software. Oh, by the way, we can't close it. I mean, you know, that's unbelievable.
No, I don't know whether it has something to do with
I think
the firmware can't be updated or something, God knows. But
Oh, yeah.
But that's just one of those interesting, colorful things. You know, it's kind of interesting. I had a discussion with a man I've known for years recently about Linux security, and I guess one of the defense rags out there had some articles about, you know, ooh, Linux is going to be insecure, there's going to be worms, there's going to be this, there's going to be that. And for all that buzz, and then we've heard that, those of us in the community have heard that for years, you know, open source is going to be insecure.
Someone's going to put a Trojan in it.
Yeah. But
my favorite.
But the thing that gets me is that here is this Cisco thing, and it seemed like it generated a fair amount of heat for about a day, maybe two. And then, oh well, you know, this is kind of a major security breach, but oh well. It's interesting how the press sometimes keys in on some things, and then other things just sort of like lets it slide by. Email viruses, of course, being another one that sort of hits the fan periodically, but everyone just sort of accepts the fact that, well, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, it's like, or teach your staff not to open the documents that get sent to them.
Why? You know, it's like the different ways that the national media treats bimbo eruptions when it's a Democrat versus a Republican.
Let's not go down that hole.
Oh, I'm not making any judgment call on which way is better. I'm just commenting that there's a difference.
Yes. Okay. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, this is serious stuff, and yet, you know, it seems like there's a nod and a shrug, and the Cisco thing seems to be about over, as far as I can tell. Next one I had on the plate comes from computerweekly.com, And it talks about a UK organization called John Lewis, which, frankly, I personally am not acquainted. But apparently it's one of their blue-chip organizations over there in the UK, and it's going to a Linux deployment, and so it's getting quite a bit of press. And that's always good to hear.
It's a mainframe deployment on top of that.
Go for it.
Yeah, they're using IBM mainframes. And this, we're finding this in a lot in the financial sector and other notable mainframe users, is that IBM is making scads of money selling their mainframes these days, and mainly mm-hmm. because Linux works so well on them.
That's it. You know, you talk about a resurrection of technology. There you go, fellas. That was something that was old hat technologically, you know, by the time I was done with school, as far as common wisdom was, and now it's got this renaissance behind it, and it all has to do with open source software.
IBM mainframes do one thing better than anything else in the entire world, and that is I/O.
Pumping bits.
It does that better than anything else.
Wow. And the last one that I have for tonight is a piece from Haaretz.com. Not really international this week, I guess. But it's kind of a vapid little piece here about WizKid develops Linux applications for Windows. And basically it's about a project called Co-Linux, which is not well described in this article, but I don't have it in front of me, but I believe colinux.org actually has the write-up of the project itself. And unfortunately, since I don't have it in front of me, as I recall, it's sort of a modified kernel to allow people to run Linux sort of semi-natively under Windows.
It's a lot like Fat Linux.
So it's, you know, it's an interesting beast. It's certainly in intent is not unique in the world, but you know, once again, these interesting projects continue to appear, even though you know, people are talking in terms of, you know, Fortune 500 and all these other things going on in the Linux world. We still see people just basically solving the problems that are in front of them and doing interesting and neat stuff. So I thought this was kind of cool, and once again, it's nice to see some good press for something that is not commercial in nature, but just some people deciding to solve the scratch an itch, as it were. So that's my my group for the night, with the exception of...
I'll segue from that previous story just to a small little ditty, seeing as that... our project is very similar to Fat Linux. We'll bring up Cameron Cooper of Fat Linux, and just sending out our kudos to Cameron Cooper of the Fat Project. Cameron Cooper has been on our show a number of times as he has grown up in the Linux community. Started his business when he had just turned 15 when he started his business, FatLinux.com, and I'm very proud to give Cameron his kudos that he has just been hired by NASA. He has now got a position at NASA.
Cool.
At least for the next four and a half months. He's actually leaving school early to head down to NASA and work on an intern project for NASA running their Linux Beowulf clusters.
All right.
So Linux WizKid makes good for sure. So kudos to Cameron. Arnie, how about your stories tonight?
Okay, a lot of these are, again, recycled from last week. There were some pretty good ones last week, and so I decided that let's just run with them. The first one is labeled on the Linux site, "With Linux software moving to desktops, rivalry takes place." And this is focusing on, in addition to Microsoft, it's focusing on Red Hat, Novell, IBM, Sun, Dell, and Walmart. This is a pretty good advocacy piece on basically on the business side of things. One of the things, a few notes in the article are Red Hat stock has more than tripled in the last year. And Novell, which entered the Linux market last fall, has risen more than 70% since it got into the Linux game. Pretty good article. One of the interesting things is his take on the Walmart Microtel alliance, where they're selling Microtel-based computers online with Linux installed. Interesting quote here. If you ask Dell, it says that it's going to be the Walmart of technology. We believe Walmart has a much better shot at being the Walmart of technology. I think that could be quote of the week. It's I like that. That was a quote by Jonathan Schwartz, who heads Sun's software group. I particularly like that. Sun Software, I guess, is really hitting strong, and they're really pushing their Java desktop in China, and they're claiming that they're going to have 500,000 to 1 million PCs in China. At least that's what they claim. Yeah, and of course, then he ends the piece by saying, Linux runs less software and hardware than Windows, and with dozens of different versions circulating, many with different interfaces and components, getting everything to work together can be a pain. Of course, it's interesting that they would say it runs on less hardware. I mean, I don't understand how Linux could run on more hardware. It runs on virtually everything, including the coffee pot in the kitchen. I don't know how we can make that claim.
I got a feeling they're probably saying things like certain WIN modems and junk like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And segue, the dovetailing nicely with that is an article about Nat Friedman called Creation Rising Over Linux Desktop, and this is out of Canada, and he's talking about Novell and the desktop thing. There's a couple sites mentioned in this article. One is freedesktop.org. And the other one is his claim that we don't see KDE as a platform, for example, but Linux as a platform. One of the things that we've seen in the desktop market is that people are saying, okay, is it GNOME or is it KDE? And I've always thought that Linux was the base, and you know, if you wanted KDE, you could choose KDE and GNOME if you chose GNOME. And apparently, the desktop Linux people think that way too, and that's a good way to think, I think. The next one is really, really an interesting, kind of funny piece, and it's called Desktop Linux Scientific Opinion. This thing is was a little bit of fluff, was put out by MLUG, Montreal Linux Users Group. And it's a click on through it and read it. It's pretty funny. It's we get to hear the opinion on desktop Linux of such luminaries as Euclid, Newton, Albert Michelson, Einstein, de Broglie, Heisenberg, Pauling, Avogadro, Planck, and Richard Feynman. Oh, I forgot Wolfgang Pauli. Heisenberg, I think, is there too, but we're not sure. Okay, that's an interesting piece. Next article is Linux TCO factors. This is from Line 56, published by a site called Line 56, the Business Executive Daily, and this is a pretty good debunker of the recent total cost of ownership things trotted out by the various industry groups that claim that Microsoft is cheaper, and their claim is that Linux total cost of ownership can indeed be driven down by 10 to 40% below what some of the industry groups have been claiming, and mainly because over long term it's cheaper. The last, how many more do I got here? A couple more. Open source OSCON has been announced, and one of the things I wanted to talk about here is that two of the key speakers are Freeman Dyson and Esther Dyson, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Why?
Freeman Dyson is a polymath. And
he's an amazing guy.
Absolutely amazing guy.
I'm actually writing a huge piece for Esther right now. That's what I'm fatigued by, because I'm barely started on. I promised her 13,000 words today.
Back in 1999, I think I was at some computer conference, and I managed to, at one point to have breakfast with the entire Dyson family.
Yeah, that was at her conference.
Which one was that?
That was her PC forum.
Right. Oh, yeah, that was it. Was Esther was there? George was there too, and I remember sitting at the table and thinking, you know, I don't often sit down with a group of six people and feel like the absolute dumbest person there.
That's a weird thing to ask there.
But it's happening now.
Yeah, they're an amazing crew. Yeah,
they are. It's if you keep your mouth shut, you can learn a lot.
There's one major article here, and a major link last week was off of NewsForge. How open source is getting nonprofits out of a squeeze, and this is some great opportunity here. Collaborative Technologies and Free Geek out of Portland, Oregon, are basically doing, you know, the dumpster dive type thing where you get old computers and recycle them, put Linux on them, certify them, and put them back out in the street for as low-cost alternatives for non-profit organizations and other type of companies who have a little bit of money, a small cash flow. And this is a pretty good outfit, and the article is in-depth and is very interesting. One of the things that is interesting is they have a company, CompuMentor, which has served nearly 20,000 organizations, distributed more than 500,000 products in the last year or two. And just unbelievable, offers cut-rate deals in IT to Bay Area nonprofits through TechSoup.org and TechSoup stock. This could be a going business plan. And I just kind of liked it, and it's a fairly good read. The last article is my Clueless Pundit of the Week, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Fred Langa of Information Week, who claims Linux Achilles' heel is that he couldn't get his sound card working on Linux. When you probably, reading this article, and you figure it out, you probably didn't pipe up the volume on ALSA, which defaults when you reboot to turn off the volume on the main the master volume. I don't know if that's what happened to him, but you know, because the Linux Achilles heel is sound drivers, I don't think so.
Is that the last one?
That's it.
Okay, why don't we take a real short quick break and come back with segment number two, and we'll start off talking to Eric before we jump into the SCO story. So.
Yeah, brief me.
Okay, everybody, Kevin, put on a tune. We'll be right back, everybody. This is I'm not afraid to We're back. It's the Lex Show. It's Tuesday night. It's April the 20th, 2004. Before we jump into segment number two, we'll ask Eric why he called.
Oh,
so Eric,
just the usual reason. I called because actually listening to what you guys talk about and what you guys consider important and discussing it with you helps me keep track of what's going on out there.
So you didn't have really a particular thing in mind you wanted to talk about tonight?
Nope, not tonight.
Okay, well, then you can just comment as you see fit. I do have a couple of things that are left over before we start talking about SCO. We were briefly talking about Sun. And, boy, I wouldn't mind getting Eric your opinion on this if you're interested in commenting.
Stick a fork in them because they're done.
That's the analyst you want to hear.
But Sun, you know, for a few weeks there, we really thought, you know, maybe they were maybe waking up.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was having some high-level conversations with the guy that Scott McNeely had deputized to talk to the open source community through me, and then it seemed to be going pretty well until the day we heard about the big Sun gets in bed with Microsoft announcement, and I haven't heard from the guy since.
Oh, you haven't? Huh?
No.
Yeah.
So that says stick a fork in them; they're done.
If nothing else, they're done with Linux.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. Keep me apprised if he does contact you, because I'd be interested in knowing right away.
No, I probably won't, actually.
I do have a...
there are some things I have to keep confidential. And,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay. But I do have an update on that story from a couple of weeks ago. Some information has been leaked out over the last 24 hours from Sun, or from a contact inside of Sun, that has stated that the plans of Sun to lay off an additional 8% of their staff over the next fiscal year are not accurate. The actual plans are that they are going to eliminate 30% of their staff over the next fiscal year. It's just that they thought that they would get beat up in the press the same day as pocketing $1.7 billion from Microsoft announcing a 30% layoff.
Don't exactly look good, do it.
Well, it doesn't. It's sad. It's really sad.
And the reason I say stick a fork in them, they're done, isn't because of pro-Linux partisanship. It's because what signing that agreement with Microsoft yells in letters of fire 9 feet high is, we don't have a strategy. We don't know where we're going.
We don't have a business plan.
We don't have a business plan. We don't have a concept. We don't have a future.
We don't have a clue.
Yeah.
I'm going to step in here for a second and not so much disagree as just put it. I've had an email conversation going with Jonathan Schwartz. That's actually about a different issue. But it is about the, you know, what I've been calling the DIYT thing, where there's a shift in power in the marketplace from the supply to the demand side.
Okay, let's talk about Jonathan Schwartz. Let's talk about a guy who can seriously propose that the salvation of Sun is selling deep discounted i86 boxes at convenience stores.
Yeah, well,
Schwartz is an idiot.
I know I'm swimming upstream on this one.
Anybody
I'm just saying that, you know, at least he's willing to talk. So
anybody who thinks that you can run from a high-margin, high-value proprietary strategy with all of the overhead and all of the organizational structure that entails somehow suddenly become a pale imitation of Dell and keep enough profit margin to keep your present corporate structure in place, the man is on drugs.
Or he's related to Bob Palmer, but that's something else again.
Yeah. Oh my God! Well, you have battle ribbons on that one, right there.
Who is this Palmer character?
Palmer was the fellow who took over Deck from Ken Olson and proceeded to take the number two computer company in the world and sell it off for dog food.
He tried he
took a damaged ship and sank it.
That's right. He tried to do exactly the same thing that Schwartz is talking about doing now. And this never works, okay?
Oh, it worked fine for him. He walked away with $40 million.
Oh, it never works for the company.
Well, that's not an issue.
It's like Jim Manzi with Lotus and a whole pile of them. Well, CA has got, it's supposedly floundering all over the place. And, you know, they had a CEO that supposedly had a walked with a bunch of money or something. That was more crooked, though. I think in this case, we're only accusing them of having no plan.
Well, Sco had a plan, couple of weeks ago to buy back 1.5 million shares. Well, if they just wait a little longer, it'll be a lot cheaper.
they just
saved millions.
Yeah. Maybe billions, you know?
It's all part of the master plan.
Okay, before we jump to the SCO issue completely, I've got one more thing I want to throw into the ring, see if there's any grabbers on this. Earlier today, actually it was yesterday that the comment was made, but it didn't hit the news until today. A senior executive from Novell was quoted saying at a small conference that Novell plans on capturing 40% of the Linux desktop market share within 3 years and 20% of the total desktop market share within that same time frame.
Given that there's not much of them.
How do you interpret a comment like this? Do you think this is just corporate bravado to stir up the troops? This is a really foolish bar to hang out there. There's nothing wrong with laying out tough goals, but I would consider those nearly impossible goals to achieve in that short amount of time.
It's closer to being possible than what Sun's talking about doing.
Yeah, I mean, Sun, I think Sun is banking on their China deals. I get the sneaking suspicion of that.
That's an interesting possibility. Yeah.
I mean, because if they're talking 1 million PCs and Java desktops in China, they could do some serious.
It's like 500 million.
Huh?
They were talking like 500 million at one point.
But yeah.
If that's the direction they think they're going to go, they're going to have to reinvent their whole business around a much lower price level,
sure.
Because it's all going to be commodity components. It's all going to be about supply chain management, and it's all going to be about distribution.
Yeah, but it can be all manufactured in China too.
Yeah, but it's still going to be about distribution.
Yeah,
even if it's managed. Even if it's manufactured and distributed from China, the bottom line is the profitability is going to be the distribution channel. It's
right.
Going to be how efficiently they can load the damn shit on trucks.
And there is no way they're going to get the kind of margins out of that business that they're used to. It's just not going to happen.
Yep.
Now, as far as Novell's claims or projections, I don't know. I mean, how much, put it this way, how much desktop does Linux have now? And the answer is, we frankly don't know.
Right. There are estimates of up to 5%.
Yeah, but we frankly don't know.
Yeah, nobody really knows.
No one really knows, for sure. And so I think this is a pretty good claim to make. You know, it's like the Monty Python routine.
Oh, yeah, you
take your claim and
I
can burrow through an elephant. You know, if Novell says that they can burrow through an elephant, I mean, you know, hey, who's to prove that they can't? I think this is real. 20% of the desktop. Hey, what's wrong? This sounds reasonable to me.
I'm just concerned. Is Novell in their charge to be the dominant Linux? I mean, they're already making claims that they are perhaps the dominant Linux company in the world. They're, you know, at least they're putting that caveat, the word perhaps, in there. But they're definitely in a charge towards becoming that dominant Linux company in the world. It's just in that exuberant charge, are they taking... Is there a possibility of them overstating expectations, and if those expectations are underrealized, will that be a black eye for the entire industry group?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, you know, my thought about this is that we have lived for so long, with this common wisdom that says, oh, Linux will never make it on the desktop. Windows will be there forever and ever. Amen. It's just damn good to see someone saying, by the way, we're going to take a big chunk of that pie and we're going to do it soon. So frankly, you know, if they're off, I can live with that. I mean, if they're saying 20% and they come in with 1%, they'll look kind of foolish. But if they're saying 20% and they manage to get, you know, 8, 9, 10%, they're going to look damn good. But I'm just glad to see some rhetoric moving in the opposite direction for once.
Hmm. I mean, if they could take, you know, a 20% of the server space away from Microsoft and 3 to 5% of the desktop space from Microsoft over, you know, the next 3 years, that would be a huge business accomplishment. And my fear is that they're just overstating their expectations, and you know, overstating the expectations can be disastrous on Wall Street. I'm just concerned, that's all. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on to the official segment number two. That is this it for Go? Is the end really in sight? Who wants to kick this conversation off?
You mean with words other than God? I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, since it was my link, let me just throw out the ball in case people haven't seen it, and then we can go from there. Lovely little piece, frankly, that I think I found on Linux Today, but it's over at the Salt Lake Tribune, and it's a little piece called Scott Stock Tumbles on Letter. And
was the byline on this Bob Mims?
Yes, indeedy.
Okay, he interviewed me about this a couple days ago, so yeah, okay, I knew this was coming.
Good. All right. Well, the bottom line for folks who haven't seen the story is that it appears that Baystar Capital, and people may remember Baystar Capital as being the organization which many people have claimed was acting inside some way, shape, or form as the potential front organization for Microsoft to channel money into the damaged organization, which we now call SCO Group. And Baystar apparently has decided that maybe having millions of dollars in this organization isn't a good thing after all. And they've actually come out and said, hey, SCO, buy it back. We want our money.
They're calling the note.
And, you know, they are claiming that that SCO reneged on part of their deal. And that they're entitled to it, and SCO, of course, is saying they're not. So, but, you know, this, as opposed to so many of the other things that we've seen, you know, with the IBM battle and some of these other ones, the thing that kind of gets me excited on this one is this is hitting them, you know, square in the heart.
Let's be specific. In SCO's rebuttal to the request for information in their press release, Blake Stilwell said that they're refusing to respond to Baystar. They're offering the opportunity for Baystar to meet with them, but they're refusing Baystar on the grounds that Baystar has yet to prove that SCO is in breach of contract. And I think those are important words. That this is coming from Blake Stowell, and he is saying they're refusing to comply because Baystar has not proved that SCO breached contract. That in itself is the height of hilarity.
You know, I've heard the words to this song before, but someone else was singing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anybody on this panel who is still prepared to defend the proposition that Blake Stowell is a decent human being?
Well,
I remember this from a couple weeks ago.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah. I remember driving up from, I was driving through Salinas while that was going on. That was impressive.
Yeah, actually it was Robin.
I laugh.
Robin Miller was defending him.
Yes.
Okay, I think Blake Stowell has unfortunately allowed himself to turn into a scum-sucking PR hack.
I think we ought to call him Bleak instead of Blake.
Bleak.
I think it's just so fittingly synchronistic that his initials are BS.
Well, there's a quote in the article which personally I love.
How do you survive as a PR guy when your initials are BS? How does that work?
Probably real well. judging by a lot of the PR that comes out of the IT industry. But there's a quote here that I love, and it says, Blake Stowell is speaking, and he says, the company is, quote, as well-funded today as it was a week ago. Now, you know, I'll tell you, when I'm looking at a stock, I like to think of the long term, like a whole week, you know. I mean, that's important to me when I'm going to invest.
Yeah, well, in a way, that's true, because they've already lost all of Baystar's money.
Blake also says, SCO is under no obligation to redeem their shares. I think that's interesting, too.
Yeah, so it's an interesting...
Spin, baby, spin.
But the big thing is, you know, when you think about it, just consider the equation, you know, SCO minus Baystar millions equals, and the answer is zero.
Better than a Purdue chicken.
You know, it's this is the cash flow, right?
Okay,
here.
No. Let's be scrupulous here. According to the figures I have, they might still have somewhere around $12 to $15 million left, because Baystar only accounted for the above the line $50 million. The below-the-line $50 million, the money that was slipped in covertly. There was overt money that's actually on their quarterlies from Microsoft to the tune of about $16 million.
Well, so let's see now. Given their current budget for lawyers, how long will that money last?
You know, I asked that question of my wife, the attorney, some months ago. And the answer is, being in a big lawsuit is expensive, but it's not expensive as you think it is. They could keep it running for a good long time, several years with $16 million.
Hmm. Well, we'll find out.
So, but that's presuming that they have no other operating expenses. And that's just not the case.
We're going to have a press release from SCO in the next few weeks, next couple of days, that they've laid off all their employees except for their lawyers.
I think that's very likely to happen.
I'm not exactly sure that hasn't already happened.
That's what the industry scuttlebutt says. There's basically nobody there left but the lawyers.
You know, I mean, because what else are they doing? I mean...
They're not selling any Unix.
You know, I'm still on the PR list and whatnot. And you know, if you take the non-lawsuit related announcements over the past year, I think it ends up being two PR pieces, one of which had something to do with a point release of a product or something like this, which, you know, could be you know, having a 16-year-old on break from high school, I had a couple of patches, you know. That doesn't really mean much.
No. Excuse me. 16-year-olds on break from high school frequently do better work than we're talking about here.
Unless it is a shell, and believe me, it could be. It could be just total BS. There could be, you know, the emperor could have no clothes. But there is activity going on within the various subdivisions of SCO. There is still stuff being posted to the SCO channel lists. There is still buzz every day going back and forth about product development within their SCO Biz group. That's their e-commerce thing. And they're starting to formulate plans for the channel event this summer. So there is some activity within the company. Now, what's going on could probably realistically be done by 15 people and, you know, in just a shell of a company. And so it is possible that there really is nothing there other than noise going on. But there definitely is a good illusion going on that there is still business going on. There certainly isn't enough business to post much in the way of revenues, though. That we can see quite clearly from their filings. So, interesting.
Well, what I'm interested in is some of the claims that were made earlier that this whole thing was just an idea to pump up the stock price so that the principals could unload stock, because they were certainly unloading it in heapfuls by the shovelful last year when this whole thing hit and the stock went up. I'm wondering what's going to come of that, because there was a lot of, now that, you know, if they go down the tubes or if they get in the tank, wonder what the stockholders will do.
Oh, they'll sue. I'm sure they'll sue. But if there remains any by August, that is.
Yeah.
So.
How about it? Shall I buy a share of SCO stock so I can be a party to the lawsuit?
No, you would have had to have bought it when it was at 40.
Oh, you're right.
40?
But,
when was it at 40?
Well, it was almost at 40 a year ago. Oh, but I think it was 38 at its peak.
No, I think their high was
wasn't it like 20 or something?
It was like 20.
I thought it was like 38.
Okay, what does Yahoo say? Yahoo says their annual 22.29.
22.29. Okay, Eric, you would have had to buy it at 22.29.
I did not.
Yep.
But the 52-year...
You know who did?
The 52-year... 52-week low is $3.
Yeah, it's almost there.
Well, we'll see it down there yet.
So if you had it done, there's a definite sell advisory going on. That's for damn sure. All right. I do have one more quick, interesting little tidbit that is just totally unresearched. It was just emailed to me like a moment ago, and that is Microsoft hired a company by the name of Veritest, and I have no details to this, but this is going to be something good.
Veritest or Veritas?
Veritest, V-E-R-I. TEST, Microsoft is claiming that Windows 2000 Server is outperforming all configurations of Red Hat Linux by 276%.
I saw a link on one of the news sites, a banner ad on one of the news sites this evening, stating that very same thing, and of course I resisted clicking through to it, but I saw some. I knew that something was going to come on that. Did you say Windows 2000?
Windows 2003.
Oh, okay.
Windows 2003 is outperforming the 2.1 kernel.
The fortunate thing is nobody's going to believe it except the convinced. So So it's like,
yeah.
I mean, it's, they've run these contrived
tests. They buy
another
survey. Like, who cares? You know,
so they've run these contrived tests before.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
I wonder if I'm going to get another Halloween document out of this.
Well, I bet you will. But 276%, that's a bold statement. That is a very bold statement. Well, before we close off the show, Doc, are you ready to talk about your new website yet, or you want to leave that for the future?
We could. It'd be interesting to see what happens if you just say it on the radio and don't point to it in text anywhere. What will happen? We're just testing it out for right now. It's called Doc Searle's IT Garage, and it's at garage.docsearles.com, and it's actually a Linux Journal site. It's just that we ran out of looking for domain names. We just went with mine, so I just gave it up. So it's a place where we can talk about what happens on the demand side, where especially when the demand side starts supplying itself. Part of the idea is to get people who aren't, you know, are shut up by their legal or their PR departments to talk about what they're actually doing. It's really hard. It's really hard. You can get CIOs and CTOs once in a while to say stuff, but there's an awful lot of stuff going on that nobody talks about. So that's kind of what the idea is here. So anyway, it's at garage.docsearles.com. And the DNS, I'm not sure, is propagated yet. The thing was only set up like a couple hours ago. So
I get it here.
You're getting it there? Well, there you go.
So yeah, of course, I run my own DNS here. So my DNS resides on my little netwinder.
Yeah, well, if you know, it's propagated through, it's cool. I mean, it's... But we just set it up. I had to point to our own Linux Journal DNS to make it work, our own name server. But it worked. So I've been screwing around with it and, you know, posting a few silly things and seeing how it goes.
So what is this? Excuse me. Is this going to be specifically for just homegrown technology?
No. This is for this is about business, you know. By homegrown, we're talking about Linux here. You know, I mean, one of the important distinctions that I want to make is that, you know, what the mainstream press does, you see, is they'll treat Linux as yet another vendor, and they'll go on and talk about, you know, Red Hat and Novell and the rest of them, and Linux isn't a vendor. Linux is a project, and Linux doesn't belong to anybody, an interesting way to look at it is it's what happened when the demand side decided to supply itself. And that's really what I think an awful lot of what's going on with open source is. And the idea here is kind of to factor out. It's not like let's deny the importance of vendors, but let's factor them out a little bit. Let's look at what's happening on the demand side. And I had an interesting talk with Mark Warner at Real today about what they're doing. You know, nobody was doing streaming before they decided that they wanted to start doing streaming. So, you know, if you go back and look at the radio business, which I used to be in the Pleistocene, and you wanted to do a transmitter, you know, you went to Harris or you went to Collins or you went to Continental or GE or RCA or one of these huge companies, and you bought yourself a big ass transmitter, right? Well, these guys, you know, had to roll their own. So, you know, they weren't going to get it from any of the major vendors. They're going to have to make it themselves. So
that's a very 70s term.
Yeah, roll your own, exactly. Yeah. So it's, you know, I'm trying, Chris, but partly I'm trying to make my own life easier for Linux Journal. I mean, and get, you know, to try to put out a salt lick that's going to bring in some people to start talking about, some of what they're doing. So that's basically it. You know, I mean, for example, you know, Sun says, okay, we're, You know, there's such a thing as transaction workers, and transaction workers need the modern equivalent of 3270 display terminals and VT100s that just run Linux and are on white boxes, and they're going to sell by the zillions, and that's going to be a big part of what the Linux desktop market is. Okay, well, that's great. If that's so, well, how about somebody come through and tell me how you're doing that? You know, anybody out there doing that? Let me hear it. Right? I want to see where that's happening.
Is this going to be? This is going to be more than a blog, then?
Yeah, no. It's going to be more than just me.
Wow! I've already scrolled off the new user list.
What's that?
I've already scrolled off the new user list.
Oh, really? Oh my God! It's already there. I didn't even know it had a new user list. I've already looked at the damn thing.
I was on the new user list. It was.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I see a whole bunch of them there.
So,
They're all coming out of the Linux.
Here they are.
Linux, so
look at that. Look at that.
Stephen Moring, Kevin.
I was on the new user list for about 15 seconds. how do you make a post, Doc, or is that not up yet?
Yeah, we have to figure that out yet. There are going to be blessed people and not blessed people. What I want to do is possibly set up a secure shell accounts for people who might want to be, you know, might not want their companies to know that they're posting here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And do it pseudonymously, if not anonymously. You know, kind of like, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who wrote for Forbes or Fortune for many years. You know, he was a mole inside one of these big companies. And he would talk about what actually happens here, you know, what this is actually like. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to have happen here. You know, I mean, I can think of one guy, for example, who talked to me one time and nearly got killed, and now he's not allowed to talk anymore. Well, bring him in. You know, I know a guy who works for CA, for example, who isn't allowed to talk. Well, maybe we could bring him in. He doesn't have to talk about CA in particular, but he can talk about some of what they're doing. I mean, some of it's good stuff. I mean, I can mention I had a panelist who actually flew out from New York from Verizon to talk about what they did in rolling out open source in Wi-Fi base stations all over Manhattan, turning public phones into little Wi-Fi kiosks, and because their legal department got spooked by SCO, that guy wasn't allowed to talk, which was an embarrassment to them. But you know, they're trying to work it out. But at times like that, I'd like to have a place where those guys could say what they're actually doing, not necessarily, you know, complain about the company or the conditions or whatever. They might do some of that, but rather let's talk about what's happening at the nuts and bolts level.
What's the site called again?
Garage.docsearles.com.
Okay,
Doc. There's something there's an article in, I think it was Information Week, announcing that McDonald's is, McGaggles is going to put Wi-Fi at their,
They're going to put them everywhere.
Yeah, and
they're
charging.
And then the CEO died.
They're charging $2.95 for a couple hours. Or you can charge $30 a month. You know, but this, what's interesting about it is they're using this, provider that I've never heard of.
Oh, really?
And we're going to have a million providers. We have to charge.
I know that it's really.
We have to pay. Pay individually everywhere you go. I got to go to Borders, so I got to pay one supplier, and I got to go to McDonald's. And wouldn't it be easier just for these? Well, don't they realize? Don't these places realize that this is a service they should do for their customers, customers, not a way to bilk their customers out of more money.
Give it 9 months. Give them 9 months. We are definitely headed there.
Yeah.
I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to pay $3 to McDonald's so that I could sit there and, boy, I'll tell you right now, if I did pay the $3, there's no way they'd get me out of that booth for 2 hours. You know, I'm going to eat that burger slowly. And then they say, you're finished eating, I got to go. I said, I'm sorry, I haven't used up all my bandwidth yet.
So look at the trend, okay? We're already seeing free Wi-Fi at airports and certain bookstores. I think Starbucks has free Wi-Fi now.
No. They're using, what do they call it, the big company.
T-Mobile?
Yeah. T-Mobile. Some of their competitors have free Wi-Fi, though, and I think market pressure is going to put paid to those charges really quickly.
I mean, it's ridiculous to charge for something like that.
Well, it's not obviously ridiculous, but once the price per hour per customer goes below a certain level, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I mean, what does it take to put up a $40 hub? I mean, you know.
That's not the main expense. The main expense is they've got to pay an ISP for the bandwidth back to the wireline bandwidth back to the ISP's facilities.
And many of these companies, like the bookstores, already have a dedicated line.
Well,
some do. Some do. Doc, I got to ask you.
Yeah, I just put up an entry on the site that saying hello to everybody as they come by.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'm glad you did. Got a couple questions about the technology itself. What is this?
It's Drupal.
It's Drupal?
D-R-U-P-A-L.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, Drupal. It's the Drupal is a, I think it's a PHP hack of some kind. A guy named Dries Beitert runs the thing. It's very much like PHP Nuke and the others like that. I don't know that much about it. I do know that when the first time I mentioned it somewhere, I don't know where. Oh no, I know what it was. I heard we were looking at it, I think, and I went over to the site and I signed up as a Drupal participant, and Dries himself recognized my name and said, what are you doing here? And I said, well, we're thinking about doing stuff at Linux Journal with Drupal, and got him in touch with Phil Hughes and the other guys that are doing the Linux Journal's own site development, and they're all over it. They love it. They think it's really cool.
Yeah, because I thought you were all hot on Blossom.
I'm hot on Blossom, too, but I'm hot on Blossom for a personal blog. Whereas this is a, look at that. I posted about 8 times. Look at that. I got to fix that one. Okay. Recent posts.
Okay. According to what I'm seeing, Doc, you have something along the lines of 15 users, no, 16 users.
They're all Linux users.
They have to be. It's a controlled study.
Yes. Doc, there's 94 guests. Keep in mind that there are only 60 people in the IRC.
Well,
so there's actually more people who are just listening to the show who aren't in the IRC who are jumping on this new thing. So we're watching history in the making.
I know, it's amazing.
This new site opens up. And there's your first 100 users, Doc, courtesy of the Linux Show. Cool. Love it. So this is a semi-wiki, semi-blog.
Yeah. I just found Ward Cunningham's original card from when he started wikis in a pile of business cards. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we took a few minutes to introduce your site to the listeners. Everybody out there, make sure you do. Yeah, that's right, Doc. That's the right showtime.
Look at all the comments. Oh, my God.
How come it posts the same thing so many times? Is it because you're clicking the button more than
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying to figure it out while we're talking. So, the interesting thing is, what you're looking at here is in Panama, and I'm in Santa Barbara, and I'm IMing with Willie, who's in Panama, running this thing. It's pretty cool. Truly international. Yeah, well, how do I...
Borderless.
Yeah, highly.
So this is strictly ASP. There's no server side. It's just ASP.
ASP? I don't know that.
It's an application service.
I don't even know what that means. It's whatever it is that THP Newt is, you know, /dot and all of that. Or scoop, it's a similar thing.
Yeah. It's all dynamic. It's like Blossom. I have a Blossom test site up.
I don't know if it's
URL.
Is Blossom dynamic? Let's see here.
Well, gentlemen, we are up to the time. And so I'd like to thank everybody for stopping by. Glad to see you come by again, Eric.
I'll be back next week, probably.
Cool.
Oh, great.
And I'd like to close the show out with saying that all of those people who have been emailing me for the last several weeks about the new Linux Daily, about how to participate in the new Linux Daily, we're going to be posting a document up to the new Linux Daily tonight, sometime, don't know when, on how you submit a file to us to be posted on the Linux Daily. So if you'd like to join us in the broadcasting process, we will have all the instructions you need to make it possible to create, edit, and send us a file. So make sure that you check that out on the linuxdaily.com website. There will be a link on the upper left-hand corner, somewhere on the upper left-hand corner of the Linux Daily website. So just check that out later tonight or tomorrow morning. Might be a little bit better. We will be looking for people to step forward and send us files, comment about not only things going on within the Linux community locally here in the United States, but hopefully we'll get people who are working in areas all around the world. People like Dave in New Zealand, we'd love to start seeing some localized flavors, some localized content from around the world popping up on the Linux Daily. So on behalf of the whole...
Can I just jump in for a second? And just, In deleting my extra posts, I think I may have killed off some comments by people. I just want to apologize to anybody I may have cut off. Feel free to comment away on what remains. So, it's weird. Carry on.
Okay. I'll go out and comment on some stuff right now. But thanks a lot. On behalf of the whole crew here at the Linux Show, make sure you do stop by next week, same time, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Daylight Savings Time. We'll be back next week, but until then, we're out of here.
Savoir.
The home of sweet romance.
Savoir.
It wins you at a glance.
Savoir.
Gives happy feet a chance
to dance. Your form.
Just like a clinging vine.
Your lips.
The warm and sweet as wine.
Your cheeks.
So soft and close to mine. Dear
bye.
A perfect holiday.
Savoir.
Where we can glide and sway.
Savoir.
Just let me stomp away with you. romance. Isn't you at a glance? Your flappy feet a chance to dance.
Your form
just like a clinging vine.
Your lips
so warm and sweet as wine.
Your cheeks
so soft and close to mine. And be divine.
Ah, oh,
my heart is singing. Why the bed is swinging. Never tired of romping. Stopping with ease at the
Savoy. What y'all?
A perfect holiday.
Savoy.
Where we can glide and sway.
Savoy.
Just let me stop away.
We do.